Hello and welcome to the Progress Theory podcast, where we discuss scientific principles for optimizing human performance. I am Dr. Phil Price, and on today's episode, we're joined by CrossFit coach and athlete, Louise Sondergaard. Now, I first came across Louise's work with Ergs when she was on the Upside Strength podcast with Sean Seal. She spoke very passionately about developing skill within these Ergs to try and improve performance, and that we are neglecting skill learning with Ergs, especially for CrossFit and functional fitness. And this made a lot of sense to me because when it comes to weightlifting, we spend so much time analysing the technique and improving the skill of weightlifting for improving performance. Why aren't we doing this with the ergs, such as the ski erg and the rower? Surely that's going to really transfer to improve performance in functional fitness and CrossFit. Well, if you want to improve your ability on the rower or the ski erg, this is the episode for you. As always, follow The Progress Theory on Instagram and YouTube and check out all of our other content. Here is Louise Sondergaard. Are you a hybrid athlete who wants to learn more about how to combine your strength and endurance training? Well, I've written a new book, The Science of Hybrid Training. In this book, I provide insight into the misconceptions surrounding strength and endurance training by distilling the past 50 years of research and drawing on the conversations I had with great scientists, coaches, and athletes on the Progress Theory podcast. This book is essential reading for hybrid athletes and coaches who are looking to understand the key training variables and their effect on the simultaneous development of strength and endurance performance. Get your copy now, available to buy from Amazon. Now, let's get into the show. Thank you so much for coming on to The Progress Theory. The reason why I reached out to you is, obviously, we've had Sean Seal from Upside Strength on the podcast twice, and his is one of my favorite podcasts. It's so informative. And then I came across your episode and your discussions around the ergs, and I was like, this is really cool, because I've noticed a lot when it comes to coaches, they see the ergs, but they're always kind of like, they talk about them in broad conditioning. You might have intervals, or sort of zone two, whatever it might be, but they don't really go into loads of depth of how they could potentially use to build up an athlete overall. And then when it comes to your discussion, it was very much focused on very various different parts when it comes to the ergs. Skill, thinking about the physiology that you're trying to achieve when using the ergs more appropriately, rather than like, here's your zone two and here's your intense stuff. You know, there's a lot more to it. And I thought, oh, that's a really good message to listen to. So I wanted to learn more. So that's why I've asked you back to give me all the information that you can give.
Yeah, like super exciting. And that's my favorite topic. So wonderful.
Ah, brilliant. Well, before we get started, do you want to talk a little bit about yourself and your training coaching background?
Sure. So my name is Louise. I'm from Denmark originally. I live and work in the UK, in London. I actually come from a bit of a non-traditional background. So I did a lot of sport as a kid. I was a semi-professional horseback rider, which is very left field. I then studied and worked in finance for a number of years. So have done a lot of training around being very analytical. I did a lot of economics, done a lot of running numbers, understanding data, understanding trends when things are really messy. I did that for, I worked in private equity in 5 years, which is buying and selling companies. And then I got very tired of that. And I'm now working as a coach full time. So I am a CrossFit coach. I'm a CrossFit level 3. And then I coach gymnastics, weightlifting, and most importantly, I coach the ergs and monostructural work. Personally, I love monostructural work, and it's probably also one of the things I'm better at of all those things. And I feel like in CrossFit and in sort of functional training most broadly, they are substantially neglected. And I've made it my mission to make it clearer for people how they can more effectively use monostructural conditioning to become a better athlete, whether their goal is CrossFit, HYROX, hybrid, or even for weightlifters. I have a couple of world records on the ski erg, which I did in lockdown, so in my own living room. I will say I probably have a much better understanding now than I did back then about how to effectively train for that. It was quite a sort of unstructured approach back then. I mean, like most people, I was just really bored. That's kind of a little bit of my edge in the erg space, that I have done some reasonably decent work myself. And I've then used what I learned and how I approach the urges to coach others, and quite frankly, also to become better at it myself.
Mm. What are your world records in the ski erg?
So I have the 5 kilometers and the 6 kilometer records. I'm a bit of a smaller athlete for the ergs. So when I wanted a goal during lockdown, I looked through the different distances. I sort of knew what my own numbers were, and I kind of looked at it and went, I probably have to go a little bit longer just because I'm not the biggest, most powerful athlete. So I'm more suited to kind of longer or middle distances on the erg. So that's why I chose those ones. They are very painful though. So not sure I would recommend it unless you're one of those people who like that type of stuff.
Are you thinking of beating those world records or adding to your repertoire of world records anytime soon?
I would love to. I'm trying very hard to become a more well-rounded athlete and leaning into my ski erg, which is one of the things I like the most, is going to make it really hard for me to get better at some of the strength stuff that I'm working on. So for now, I put it a little bit on the back burner, and I do it mostly as a sort of supplemental thing for my CrossFit and gymnastics and weightlifting training. But once I'm on the other side, hopefully at some point of getting stronger or strong enough, then I definitely want to try and return to it with a bit of a more size and a bit more strength and see what I can do.
What do you think led you to really love the ergs? Was it that time in lockdown where you had a period of boredom? So you then just tried things and it led to a period of creativity, which made you try different things. And then just over time, you just amounted a load of practice and realized, actually, I really love this type of training. And then you went further with it. Or did the love of the ergs come before that?
So I used to do running, not very well, I may add. Like I was a very average runner. And I considered myself very fit. This was before lockdown. Well, I thought I was quite good at it. And then I had to do a competition on the rower, and I'd never been on a rowing machine before. And I was so humbled. I was like, I thought I was really fit. I was doing so much work, but that screen was giving me nothing. Like I was absolutely sending it. And there was just no, it felt like there was nothing I could do. I then went to seek out some coaching. And I realized, oh my gosh, if I get just a little bit of technique, I can get so much more output for the same amount of effort or even less effort. And to me, that was just such a beautiful revelation. That was my initial interest in the ergs. I got that sort of some very basic coaching of just like, oh, use your legs. Hey, there's like a rhythm to this movement. And from there, I was like, no, I need to learn more because so many people around me, sort of general fitness enthusiasts, would just go on the ergs and smash them as hard as they wanted to or could, but actually never get better. And once I realized there was this whole technique component to it, that was, I'll say, it was and is neglected by the general public to a large extent, I got really intrigued and I just, you know, I saw a gap in my knowledge. I was like, I got to learn more. Like, this was amazing. Of course, you get better by getting fitter, but there was a whole point about technique and rhythm and understanding movement that I just hadn't really explored before. This is before I became a coach, by the way. I hadn't even thought about that side of things. And I thought it was just so fascinating. And my sort of very, quite analytical mind, stat-based brain just loved the screen because it was so ruthless. Like the PM monitor just telling you exactly how much work you're doing and you can't fool yourself. You can't go, oh, I felt like I was going at a pretty good clip or I needed to rest in that set of thrusters. It was just like, no, the numbers are there. They don't lie. You're just going to have to deal with that output. And I thought that was really exciting.
No, certainly. With the terms of technique, yeah, that's probably one thing I see a lot. If I went to like a CrossFit gym, for example, and they've created some kind of workout of the day and it's mixed modality, and that's the only time that quite often the people that come to the CrossFit gyms actually get exposed to something like a ski, or what I'm thinking of particularly is the rower. Because it's within like a mixed modality sort of Metcon, there's a lack of opportunity to really go into detail regarding coaching of the skill. So you don't really see people improve in the skill. So they don't tend to improve in the skill. Whereas because quite often the first half of, say, an hour's session in a CrossFit gym is focused on some kind of strength movement, squat, weightlifting, whatever it might be, there's a lot of time just to sort of interact with the coach, actually get some feedback, and people tend to improve in those skills. And so they see them more as skills. But for some reason, for the rower, people don't often relate the skill to that, which I think is wrong. It's definitely something that, you know, because you've put a particular focus on it, you've seen amazing improvements in that. Have you noticed this? Probably not in your CrossFit gym, because you've probably really focused on the skill of rowing. But have you noticed that in CrossFit in general, and people should spend more time learning the skill of these ergs?
Yes, 100% relate to that. And it's a really big battle to fight, actually. If you ask CrossFit coaches, what are the movements that you feel like you coach the least or you neglect the most, the ones that will come up, rowing, running, ski erg, any kind of bike. It's all these things that, because I will say the training of a CrossFit coach to a very large degree neglects these areas, because it's almost assumed that you just pull as hard as you can and you're fine. So there just isn't this focus on the fact that these movements can actually be very technical. So I think it's a combination of, it is not a focus in the training. CrossFit training does a little bit, but it's very poor. I've done, you know, 3 separate levels of CrossFit courses, and I've had very little exposure to any of this. And so there is this lack of understanding and appreciation. And secondly, I also feel a lack of confidence from the coach's point of view of what is actually good technique. It gets sort of battered into you that you do need to coach and cue everything, but not the machines, not the running. That's just the filler movement. That's the one where we keep people moving. And it requires a big cultural change in the coaching team to get them to actually spend time coaching the machines. It's perfectly doable, just like it's doable to coach any other movement in the gym. But I feel like it's that lack of appreciation. And then it's that skill gap also, that if you actually went and sort of called a CrossFit coach and like pushed them up against the wall and said, can you actually tell me how to ski erg properly? Can you break it down the way you break down a snatch? I think some of them would be really hard pressed to do it. And that also obviously makes you quite reluctant to coach it. Because there aren't many good rowing resources if you look for them in terms of how to coach rowing well. I'd say on the ski erg side, there's maybe just a couple of people, and you have to look quite hard to find someone who actually has some kind of technical model or system for how to coach it. Because there is this perception like, oh, it's just conditioning, quote unquote. So just tell people to go as hard as they can, and probably that's the purpose of this exercise.
Yeah, so there's a lack of coaching, but there's also a lack of knowledge base in the coaches for it. And also the information to improve that knowledge base isn't as well known or easily accessible as, say, I don't know, strength stuff, gymnastics and weightlifting. So it's quite an interesting cycle that's kind of happening. Do you feel that this is a culture that's now changing? And maybe that's because more and more people are like, oh, actually, if I train really hard, I might go for a record, might be national, world record, whatever it might be, 100-meter ski erg, 200-meter ski erg, 5K ski erg. You know, there's lots of different ones which potentially could be very attractive to many athletes. And all of a sudden you get this culture shift of people really trying to push the ergs. And you think, do you see that? I mean, this is something you've done, but do you see it's changing within the CrossFit community or functional fitness? I know they overlap, but do you see that change happening?
I think it's in bits and pockets. And one thing that I definitely have seen is that HYROX is helping a lot. So the fact that in HYROX, you have both the rower and the skier, the fact that they are fixtures of that program and actually are quite important for performance has definitely opened a lot more people's eyes to the fact that, oh, maybe I should learn. Maybe I should think about this. Maybe I should seek out someone who can help me. Maybe I should find resources. The problem with CrossFit is that it is not considered very sexy. And secondarily, for CrossFit, for the open and quarterfinals, there will never be anything other than a rower included. So they do not include the skier in the equipment list. So it is something for that specific part of the season, which is most people's goal. The skier, for example, will not be very important. I would still argue the rower is there pretty much every year. So if you are not spending as much time on the rower as you are on the bar muscle up, then I think maybe you have wrong training priorities. But in the CrossFit community, this is considered grunt work. It's not considered technical. And there is this little bit of a stigma that it's not very sexy to just post videos of you rowing on Instagram, whereas the handstand walks look really good. I would then argue that for general skill transfer and also the likelihood of something actually coming up in a competition, you probably would be a lot better off learning how to row properly. Definitely this shift towards more high rock style training, and also I think more awareness of world records, whether that be in skiing, in rowing, the fact that the world indoor rowing champs has a pretty high profile now. All those things I think are helping to put things on the map. Like, there are fun things to do in this space. There's technical development, there's physiological development you can do on these machines, and it will transfer over really well. Like, we've been, I think, quite well served in CrossFit that some of the big kind of names have talked explicitly about how they use machines to get fitter. So I'm thinking about Matt Frazier talks about rowing a lot, talks about how he thinks about conditioning work in a very kind of structured manner. Similar, you have some of the other big athletes who have very explicitly talked about building energy systems in a much more structured manner than would be the traditional CrossFit constantly varied model, which maybe doesn't allow for that level of work and progression that is necessary to develop a good foundation for these ergs.
Why do you think that the ski erg isn't included in the quarters and semis? Is that just because of what they expect most boxes or most people at home, their sort of equipment availability? They see more people have rowers, so let's program rowers. We want more people to be involved in these community type competitions, so that's why they always program that. And ski erg's been left by the wayside because of that.
Yes, and it's a bit of a fun one to think about, actually, because some of the things that I include in that equipment list are not that normal to have. So they do have a glute ham developer, which is, if you know, it's like a monstrous, you know, machine, that a piece of kit that most smaller gyms definitely won't have. They will have certain pieces of very idiosyncratic tick kick, but I do believe the ski erg is a consequence of them thinking not that many gyms have it. I would hope that since actually now I believe a lot of gyms have ski ergs, I think that's changed a lot over the past 5 years, that they could start including something like a ski erg in. They also don't include assault and echo bikes, but there's a better reason for that because they are not actually calibrated machines, right? So I understand why you wouldn't want something that can be tinkered with included in an online competition. My hope is that over time, that CrossFit equipment kit list evolves in line with what equipment is actually available at the gyms. Because I think, not just because I personally love the ski erg, because of course I do, but also because I think it would be helpful to CrossFit to have more programming options when they're programming monostructural work. Because currently, for an online competition, they've got the rower and they've got the shuttle run, which arguably, the shuttle run is not really a monostructural, well, it's monostructural, but it's more about how good athletes are changing direction rather than an actual energy system test, in my point of view. So adding an extra machine could be really beneficial. And most gyms, from what I know at least, will have at least a couple of ski ergs now. So there is an obvious, I think, addition there that they could include, which would be great for us erg people too.
Yeah, of course. Say if I am a novice, I have generally good aerobic conditioning and I wanted to improve in one of the ergs. Let's say ski erg, because that's what we've kind of been talking about the most. In terms of my energy system development, and I'm just starting, where do you think you would focus my training?
If you're relatively fit in terms of energy systems already and you want to get better on a specific erg, I would do most of your work as technical, depending on time available. So say we were doing 3 sessions a week, I'll probably be doing 1 session that was quite specific for whatever time domain you were looking for. So say you were looking to get better at a 2K ski, we would be looking at doing intervals with target paces and duration around that 2K area. So a classic 5x500 meter session, for example, at race pace with some rest in it, something like that, then I would have two additional sessions, which would be more technique focused. So slower rating, so slower stroke rate, lower resistance on the machine so that you can actually feel when you're applying force correctly with some specific constraints. So things like stroke rate, things like consistency in terms of power output, specific technical changes or drills we would be looking to do. Typically for the skier or the row, if I was looking for more general aerobic development, I would probably be looking to get that from either a bike or running, just because if you're not so used to spending substantial amounts of time on the ergs, it can be a little bit lower back for the skier, can be a little bit shoulder heavy. So if we're looking at kind of total working volume in a week, when you're on the erg, I want you to focus on very specific things. If we're looking for more general adaptation, I would be going on something that's less strain or less impact, where we can more easily hit the general stimulus that we're looking for without running into local fatigue in the shoulders, in the lower back, or running into, say, if your technique is really poor, you might just not be able to sustain a ski erg for 30, 40 minutes. So we might be better off putting you on something where you can sustain the work for a long period of time without substantial discomfort and without having to focus too much. That when I program the machines, I think a lot about how we can best accumulate quality volume. So I try to put my athletes in a position where when they're on that machine, they are doing quality work. I know that most of the people I coach will have done enough junk volume in their life because they've done CrossFit or functional fitness or mixed modal, where they've just gone as hard as they want. So I'm not too concerned about training that specific piece. I want to make sure that when they are doing their sessions, they are doing things that are making them better. So I try to set them up for success with constraints so that they are actually doing that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, certainly. It's nice to see how there's like a blend of all the different modalities. Like you say, if you want to develop in the rower, but you're still using the bike because there's different elements that you need to work on, skill, general conditioning, all those types of things. They can all complement each other. So it's quite nice to see like, okay, there's several ergs, but I want to be really good at this erg, but I also need to be pretty proficient at the other erg so they can provide me with the level of general or specific conditioning I need to get better at the specific erg that I want to be good at. It's really nice, well-rounded approach. It's really cool.
Yes, and I think there is a bit of a neglect in some functional fitness programs of this idea about general adaptations and how we can get a general adaptation with the least possible amount of fatigue or discomfort. And that's where I love the bikes, because even if I have a heavier athlete, like a more strength-based athlete, for example, I'm very unlikely to cause them harm on a bike. And if they have other things than the ski or whatever they're training for that they need to do during the week, the fatigue from the bike is a lot easier to overcome than, say, running fatigue. And similarly, if I have someone who wants to get better on the ski but still wants to be able to do a proficient squat snatch, limiting that overhead volume with the ski erg a little bit so they don't get too tight in their shoulders and their lats allows them to still do all of the other things they want. So I quite like to kind of mix and match and try to only be specific when specificity is actually needed. Because even like I've listened to many of these, you know, even world record professional rowers, even they, at least the smart ones, the more advanced ones, will be doing general work off the rower. And for me, that tells me, well, if I've got a relative amateur, they definitely need to also take some of that generic work into a modality where maybe it's a bit easier to be successful.
Yeah, certainly. There's something very similar in Van der Poel's How to Skate 10K as a speed skater, but he did 5 and 10K. And then most of his off-season was done on a bike in a similar way. It was just building up volume, using a modality that, you know, was more easy to recover from so he could then increase the amount of volume that he was doing in that off-season. So it's really cool to see the parallels, if you know what I mean.
I'm going to interrupt here because I wanted to share with you the Progress Theory newsletter.
If you want the latest information and recommendations on how to optimize your physical and mental performance, then subscribe to the free Progress Theory newsletter on Substack today. Click the link in the show notes and subscribe to get the best information on human performance sent straight to your email. Now, back to the podcast. Are there any main differences between, say, training for a skier versus training for the rower? Two different movements. And obviously, you're going to have different techniques for each one. And I know you mentioned previously regarding you might make some changes in their training program to make sure that they were, you know, fresh at certain times to make sure it didn't interfere with other training or it didn't interfere with their skio training, for example. Are there any specific differences that you've noticed when coaching someone that's wanting to really improve the skio versus someone that's really wanting to improve in the rower, for example?
Yeah, so, I mean, the good thing is those two do transfer and complement each other really well. So even if that's not the objective, we do end up seeing that if someone gets really good on a skio, they'll probably also be pretty easily coached on the rower and vice versa, because a lot of the concepts are similar. I'll say for both of them, depending a little bit on technique and how strong the athletes are, there is some substantial lower back discomfort if you do a lot of volume. So for both of those, that's definitely something I do monitor and manage when you build up volume. The skier tends to be a more upper body bias. So we do get that sense that, or at least what I've seen is that you do get quite substantial upper body fatigue. And because most people have a very hard time being aerobic in their upper body muscles versus lower body, which is a lot easier, more natural. We train, most of us have trained that more or less our whole life. They can be quite a big jump or quite a long time until you get to the point where you can actually move continuously and consistently using primarily upper body muscles. Now, obviously, I do preach a lot that ski erg is not just an upper body exercise. It is a hinge. It is abs. It is your glutes as well. There's a little bit of squatting. So I'm not saying that it's just upper body, but the bias is definitely way more upper body. And because most people don't come from a sporting background where they've used the upper body substantially, we do see that it takes a lot longer to get used to just going continuously for 30 minutes. Like, I would think that most people can probably row continuously for 30 minutes if you give them some basic technique pointers without getting substantially sore. But on the ski, it's a little bit harder and you need to just be a little bit more thoughtful around the total volume of upper body reps, because that resistance on the flywheel, even if you take it all the way down, can still be relatively high compared to the maximal muscular contractions you can do in your upper body. So if you think about the resistance on a rower versus a squat or a deadlift, it's still a very low percentage, whereas the resistance on a ski erg versus a pull-up or lat pull-down or even a press, I know you're not actually pressing the ski erg, but you know what I mean, the upper musculature, it's a lot higher percent. Mm. So we are much more likely to get local muscular occlusion. We are much more likely to run into some issues there. It's interesting to see that swimmers and gymnasts who have trained most of their life with the upper body find that a lot easier, right? Because they have those reps. They have the background of doing an upper body dominant sport. So it is just a little bit of a higher barrier to the ski until you get to the point where you can just comfortably do a 40-minute long, slow ski. That can be quite a big challenge. So you just need to be a little bit more careful with how you build that up. The second main difference is the sitting on the rower versus the standing on the ski erg. So the local discomfort you start to feel after doing longer duration exercise is just quite different. I think everyone who sat on the rower for a while knows that it can start to hurt your bum a lot. Mm-hmm. You don't get that on a ski erg to the same extent, but you are standing. So some of the mechanics around how your heart is pumping blood through the body, etc., is a little bit different. And you do just feel fatigue slightly differently because you're stood on your two feet. So again, if that's something that you're not used to, if you have a very sedentary job, that might actually feel quite hard, while other of us just enjoy not having to sit on the rower for so long because that's way worse. Those are some of the main points I would highlight. It is very individual, again, depending on your physiology. The ski can feel quite different, as can the rower. And I guess the third point I would make is that on the rower, we have this kind of like ability to compensate between two groups of relatively big muscles. So you can do kind of a more squatty row, which would be the preference. As you fatigue, you could do a more deadlifty row. You are still alternating between two very big groups of muscles, and you can probably quite confidently do that for a while. On the skier, there's a little bit less room to play with, so you can make it a bit more squatty, but it will impact the efficiency of your stroke quite a lot, as in I wouldn't necessarily recommend that. You can move your grip width a little bit to bias different muscles in your upper body, but in the end, it will be very similar. You are working some relatively small muscle groups. So your ability to lean into different compensation patterns or strategies, I'd say, is a little bit less on the skier because you will very quickly deviate from an efficient technical model. Whereas on the rower, I'd say you have, if you've got strong legs, you've got a little bit more room to maneuver around and maybe offload one thing, unload one thing a little bit more. The final thing I would say is the rate. So the stroke rate on the skier is just naturally higher. I usually just go plus 10 as a simple rule of thumb. So plus 10 strokes per minute on the skier versus the row, which means you are just doing more muscular contractions every minute on average. They are smaller muscles, so it doesn't necessarily lead to a sort of higher workload for the heart, but it is definitely a different feeling. It's a different kind of learning to settle in and be precise about the stroke rate you are doing. I feel gets harder for beginners the higher the stroke rate is. I can get most beginners to do relatively comfortable row 20 strokes per minute. When I go ski 30 strokes per minute, I find that for people who are new to the sport, that can be a very challenging ask because it feels more foreign. You have to be more switched on in terms of keeping that stroke rate consistent so you can learn to work good ratings and learn to start to develop that sort of technical proficiency.
Have you noticed, it's something you said earlier regarding people haven't really done an upper body dominant sport, but quite often if they have come from sport, not only is it not upper body dominant, but they've, say for example, a rugby player decided he wanted to move over to CrossFit and he's spent years doing sort of hypertrophic work where they're focusing on certain rep ranges, very, very different from the high rep ranges of say CrossFit, or especially if you're going from one exercise to another in a mixed modal Metcon. Do they often really struggle with the ski erg because they just haven't had the ability of requiring blood flow to go to the muscles to do more sort of low intensity, high rep range work, and then that blood flow has to be redistributed somewhere else, and they really kind of struggle with the ski erg just because of their training history? So not only are they come from a sport which isn't upper body dominant, but their training history actually makes it harder for them to then learn to be very good at the ski erg.
Yeah, I think that's true. Again, we always get people can be very idiosyncratically different. So I'm just going to like really generalize here. There is definitely an archetype in CrossFit because they are quite strong, but they are not very metabolically fit. Everything becomes bodybuilding. So they just get muscular occlusion and everything becomes a pump and they become massive. Like they look amazing when they do CrossFit because they look like they're doing a hypertrophy program. They're not. Their heart is so weak compared to their muscles that everything becomes local occlusion. And that definitely also happens with the skier. And the concern I have when I coach those athletes is they will like to put the damper really high because they then feel like they're generating a lot of power. And we really have to go through a bit of a process of realizing that that is not a sustainable way for them to work. So this kind of definitely lower body dominance makes it harder. It's almost like they wouldn't know how to approach this style of training, like using your upper body like that. But it's also this getting away from this idea that every muscular contraction almost needs to feel maximal and teaching them that, yes, you can do 10 really good pulls on the ski erg. I'm really impressed. Now, sadly, I need you to do a 2K. And that's going to be at a substantially lower resistance, at a substantially lower rate. It's really kind of teaching those people to work continuously with that change of blood flow, which feels very awkward if you've never done it before. I think what I can liken it to is if anyone doesn't really understand what we mean, is like, say you're doing a triathlon or triathlon training, that moment when you come out from the swim and then try to move on with your life, that's what it's going to feel like. It's like the wrong muscles are working. There is nothing left here. And you can get that feeling in CrossFit with the Sphere as well. I quite like to then give mixed machine intervals, but not mixed modal, with very specific goals. So very specific stroke rates, very specific, like I want you to keep this specific pace, say on a bike, and then I need you to go on the ski erg and I need you to hit this stroke rate with this very low drag factor. So they get used to that feeling, they get used to the sensation of, okay, if I just start moving, it will get better in a little bit. I just need to not do a maximal contraction. That's type of work. But yeah, definitely, depending on your sporting background, it can be quite a different journey into learning just the ergs in general and the ski erg in particular because of that upper body focus.
Yeah, definitely seen that. People that come from more of a strength upper body background, as soon as they do some form of conditioning, they go straight into intervals. But intervals that are quite short and require, you know, high force output initially, and they can kind of coast it out for, I don't know, 100 meters, 200 meters, whatever the interval might be. But it's kind of that they go to. They have a certain set of affordances from their previous training, and then they try and take that over to conditioning, and then that's only hitting part of what is required for conditioning. So it's interesting how your different methods to try and coach the body out of that, both as a skill and I guess physiologically as well. So for mixed modal work, do you have any recommendations for someone that wants to be better at the ski erg or the rower, but they want to start incorporating that with other things? So particularly someone that wants to be very good at functional fitness or CrossFit, and they know they have to move between ski erg rowers to more, I guess, complex movements, whether it be gymnastics or some form of weightlifting movement. How do you incorporate the erg work with trying to develop that sort of particular skill or be good at Metcons?
So the first thing I would say is make sure you are sufficiently good on the erg in isolation. So there is no point trying to put a ski erg into a workout if you can't really manage a ski erg on its own. So making sure that you develop that level of skill primarily for most people, but also have a baseline level of energy systems, aerobic fitness, whatever you want to call it. The best ways to incorporate that, if you are doing a mixed modal program, if you're doing multiple things, is to try and add in technique work to either your warm-up or your cool-down. So technique work doesn't have to be fast. It also doesn't have to be particularly hard, but there needs to be some constraint. So instead of doing a 10-minute easy spin on the bike, could we do a 10-minute row where we do 2 minutes at 20 strokes per minute, and then we do 2 minutes 24, and then we go back down to 20, up to 26, something like that where there's some kind of goal? Or can we turn it into a rowing drill? See, you need to work on using your arms, legs, so like less, so a legs-only rowing drill. Could we give you some specific, say, ski at a 210 pace, so very easy, but I want the stroke rate as low as you can. Can you change your warm-ups so that there's a specific goal? Because they are very well suited for that type of work. Similarly, can you add 10 minutes after your session with some similar goals? Is there a little bit of extra work you could do so you can just accumulate quality time on the machine, whatever that means to you? That's a very time efficient way of getting it in. Also, when you are doing mixed modal workouts, is there some constraints or goals you could give yourself so that you are working on some of the things you need to get better at? So is it holding a specific pace, but at a low stroke rate? Is it trying to look at your force curve every single rowing stroke and make sure you're not over pulling with your arms? Is it keeping a consistent power output every single stroke on the ski erg? There's lots of little things you can use the Concept 2 displays to help you look at. And just starting that journey of awareness is often enough that you will actually get better. I really like sort of microdosing for multi-sport athletes, microdosing little bits of technique work where it fits in anyway. So we stop doing those generic, untargeted warm-ups, but instead do something that we know is a quality we need in our program anyway. I think that's a really good way of getting around it. Obviously, if you want to get more serious so that you are actually rowing or skiing at very good paces and potentially looking at records or that on its own, then we need to spend substantially more time on the machine and we probably need dedicated sessions. But if you're just looking to get a little bit better, I think you can do very well with that microdosed approach. Filming yourself as well. I know it's super awkward, but just like we film every single Olympic lift we do with CrossFitters, we could also just put the camera on for 30 seconds while we are doing the ski erg and the warm-up and just have a little look. Because often, even if you don't have a coach, just looking at that yourself, you can start seeing some of the common errors. You can see when you're over-pulling, you can see when you're over-hinging. You can start getting a bit of a better sense of what am I actually doing when I'm on the machine? And that can start you down the path of becoming more efficient.
Yeah, we should start a movement. If more people filmed their rowing and their ski erg stuff, maybe that footage might end up on Instagram, like just like all the weightlifting stuff that they film. And then people might be more aware of the skill of rowing.
Yes. And also, I would very much like that people were a bit more aware, because some of the stuff I see posted with people on ski ergs, like, I think they think they're funny, but it's actually very upsetting when they do like wild stuff. And you're like, you are a really good athlete. Why are you doing a butterfly ski erg? It makes no sense. Why are you jumping? It makes no sense. I know you're better than this. Take this opportunity. You clearly looked at that video before you uploaded. And I'm not saying you can upload whatever you want. I don't mind. But I wish that people would have the level of introspection and analysis they apply to their squats, or they apply to their muscle ups, or to their running pieces. Could we apply some of that level to what we're doing on the ergs? That would be a great thing, I think.
No, certainly. And I think it's such an important message you said regarding the warm up and the cool down. There's so many times that the beginning of a particular session might be 5 minutes on a particular erg, but they just see like, oh, just spend some time there because, you know, we want to increase muscle temperature, increase our heart rate, all of those types of things for a general warm-up. But that's 5 minutes. You could be focusing on something very specific, which you get all of those important warm-up physiological adaptations, but also improve the skill. So yeah, people are missing a trick. They're not paying enough attention to the finer details, like you're saying. So I think it's a really important message. I think it's really, really, really cool. Just to finish off, tell me a little bit more about your current training. And I know you said you're not necessarily focusing on the ergs at the moment, but what are your goals?
I'm trying to get better at CrossFit. That's my overall goal, which for me means getting stronger and getting more skilled. So those are my primary targets. With that, I am deep down an erg gal. Like, I do love it. So how I structure my training is I do my weightlifting in the morning, I have a break, I do my gymnastics in the afternoon, and then I will do some erg work. On the days where I do heavy strength training and intense gymnastics, I do an hour of zone two, which I do mostly on a bike and once a week on a rower, once a week on a ski erg, because just like I was preaching, I myself do need some time at a low stroke rate with a low damper, just getting a sense for the machine, improving my timing, working through that consistent power output. So I do that myself on both those machines. I am able to do that while still improving the things that are my main focus at the moment, which is my strength and my skill. But with this kind of training structure, plus one heart bike session and one heart running session a week, I'm actually able to still get fitter, even though I probably spend a shockingly low amount of time at intensity for most people who train CrossFit. It's probably, you know, what, 15 minutes at like high intensity and then like about an hour of tempo running a week. That's all the intensity I do outside of a barbell. And then the rest is just low zone two intensity. So quite kind of polarized. Yeah, I'm very focused on my coaching at the moment. So a lot of the training I do is also to learn to be a better coach. So trying things out, sort of looking at how to find minimum effective doses, find effective ways of training different things at the same time. So my own goals are a little bit on the back burner at the moment, but I'm going to do a couple of competitions this year, just kind of mixed modal stuff, try to get better at CrossFit. And then hopefully at some point I can, when I feel like I'm strong enough that I've lived out that part of my, or I won't stop doing it, but I can stop focusing on it so much and go back to doing more erg work, maybe adding in some more running. That's kind of the goal long-term, but really I focus on coaching and training in such a way that I can become a better coach at the same time. And I can use some of the things I learn in my own training to then help my athletes.
No, certainly. Like, training's your canvas, isn't it? And that's where you trial and error stuff. And from that trial and error, make decisions on what you think's best for coaching and then impart that onto your clients. I think that's absolutely wicked. So in terms of, like, do you offer programs, specific programs, or is it more through your coaching at your CrossFit Box?
So I have some online programs that are pre-made off the shelf, relatively low price. So it's 2K row and 2K ski targeted. So those ones are some of my best friends, and you can do that in your own time as a supplement to your normal training. I do also offer custom programming, which is most of what I do. So custom programming and coaching, which for some of the people I train, it's ergs only. So say I've had someone who trained for a 500 meter row competition, so we'll focus very much just on that rower. Other people where, which is much more general, which is more CrossFit based. So a little bit of everything, but that is a one-on-one thing with a video review, interactivity, all of this good stuff. And then I coach in person, mostly CrossFit classes, where I both do programming and coaching. So a little bit of everything. I'm trying to see a little bit of erg programming, a little bit of erg technique into my CrossFit, into my mixed modal athletes, so that over time they get better, but without thinking I've put them on like a 5 days a week rowing program.
Yeah. Where can we access this? Do we go through your Instagram page?
Yes. So I have a link in my bio, which has access to the programs that also have free trials. You can message me directly, or you can inquire via, there's a little box you can put your stuff, your name in and what you're looking for in there. And we can discuss further what I can help you with, basically. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. I'll put all of that in the show notes and advertise it with the episode. So that's really cool. As like a parting gift for our listeners, what would be your number one piece of advice for anyone that's looking to improve on the ergs, on top of message you and check out your programs?
Do more long, slow, low damper work, please. That alone, with no other coaching, no other information, you will probably figure out how to be efficient if you just do that.
Brilliant. Perfect message for everyone, I think. But Louise, that's amazing. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. I had a good time.
Before we wrap up, I want to give a shout out and my thanks to my production partner, Cult Media. If you are thinking of launching a podcast or want to grow your audience, head to www.cult.media, that's cult with a K, to get started today.